And welcome you very warmly to St. Helens this afternoon. It's very good to have you with us this lunchtime. I know there are numbers of people who are in St. Helens for the very first time this lunchtime, and a warm welcome to you especially. My name is William Taylor. I'm rector of the church here at St. Helens. We hold lunches like this on a number of occasions through the year, and the aim of these lunchtimes is to take a slightly more kind of relaxed look at an aspect of the Christian faith, which might have raised questions that we want to just investigate a little bit together. The form is, obviously, we have lunch, and then we have a talk, and then after lunch, we finish at about one, after the talk, we finish by 1:40. So if you're sort of itching to get back to your screen, we will be finished by 1:40, and then you'll be able to make your way away. But we'd love you to stay and chat if you would like to do that. Might just say for your own benefit, as well as for everybody else, is that if you have a mobile telephone, it would be helpful if you switched it off so as not to interrupt what's going on. And the talk today, as you will probably know, is Where is God When It Matters? Which it seems to me is a terrific and apposite subject to be looking at today. On the tables, you'll find that there's a blue sheet. Perhaps if you take that in your hand now, and the talk is going to be addressing the passage, or the passage rather, is going to be used that's there on the back. A psalm is printed. You'll see there's a box on one side with Christianity Explored, which is a short 7-week course that we run here. And that course is an opportunity to investigate further the claims of Jesus Christ. It's an excellent course. It runs on Thursday lunchtimes. And that may be something that you would like to think about. It starts on Thursday the 25th. You can see that printed there. We'll be more about that later on. Well, now it's great pleasure to welcome Richard Coombs. Richard is a very, very good friend of mine, which is always very dangerous when you're welcoming people, because the temptation is to spill the beans in all sorts of ways, which I will resist. Richard used to work here in the city on the team at St. Helens earlier in the 90s. He is now vicar of Burford, which you may know is the gateway to the Cotswold, so we're very grateful that he's left the soft beige hue of the Cotswold's autumnal scene to join us. He's married to Nicola, and they have 3 delightful children. So I'm going to hand straight over to Richard. So over to you.
Thank you, William, for those kind words. Seeing that you have resisted the temptation to spill the beans, I better as well this morning. Now, if you want some idea of what Burford is like, think about the Vicar of Dibley and what Dibley is like, and you've got a fairly accurate idea of what Burford is like. So it's very nice to be back here in the city and to be back in touch with reality just for a few hours. Now, I guess all of us will remember where we were on Tuesday, the 11th of September, 2001, when we first heard the news. I was at my desk in my study, and somebody from my church phoned me to tell me the story of what sounded like the storyline of a more fanciful Hollywood B movie. 3 hijacked airliners deliberately thrown into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, as we know only too well. And I guess, like many of us, I spent the next hour glued to my television set, watching as those 2 110-story skyscrapers crashed to extinction, along with the thousands of people who were still left in them at the beginning of the working day in Manhattan. And I don't know if you found this, but it was almost sort of addictive. One couldn't stop looking at the horror as it sort of unfolded in front of us. And eventually my wife said, well, we ought to pray. Because when things like this happen, that is one of the things that Christians do. And so we prayed in front of our television set for the hundreds, thousands of devastated lives across America and across the world. We prayed for the emergency services, of course, not realizing at that moment that many of them were trapped in the towers as they were seeking to rescue people. We prayed for the leaders of America that they might be given wisdom well beyond their own abilities to deal with that horror. And then we prayed for ourselves and for the rest of our world that somehow people might be enabled to turn to God to live through this horror. And as we prayed, a sentence from the Bible kept on coming back to me. And eventually I went and looked it up. And I found that it was from Psalm 46. And if you'd like to take the blue paper, you will see Psalm 46 written out for you. And the sentence which kept on coming back to me was verse 1 of this psalm. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Well, during the days afterwards, I began to look at this psalm in a bit more detail. And to my amazement, I discovered that this ancient Jewish poem is a poem about a city in ruins. Jerusalem, the city where God was thought to dwell, the symbol of Israel's security as it still is today, is being destroyed. It feels like the earth has given way, as it says in verse 2. It feels as though the mountains have fallen into the heart of the sea. Later on in the poem, we see the reason for the destruction. Verse 6, nations are in uproar. Kingdoms are falling. Now, these terrorists, whoever they are, couldn't have chosen two more potent symbols of our security, could they not? The Twin Towers of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the centers of international trade, the center of international defense. And apparently, I don't know if it's true, the third plane was heading for the White House, center of international politics. Goodness knows what it must have felt like if one was on one of those airliners heading for what one knew was certain death. And I can hardly bear to think of what it must be like to be so wild with terror that you will throw yourself out of the 80th floor of a skyscraper, taking, I think, quite a few seconds to hit the deck. But what was our response as we watched in horror? Well, was it not like this? We felt as though the mountains had fallen into the sea. Nations were in uproar. Kingdoms are falling. And where do we turn at a time like this? Where do we find security when there seems to be no security? And in many ways, exactly a month later, it seems even worse, doesn't it? As we see the news coming out of our televisions moment by moment. Where is there security when it seems as though the very foundations of our lives are under threat? Well, even in the face of a city in ruins, God says that he is our refuge and our strength, an ever-present help, even in trouble like this. He puts it in different ways, in verse 7 and in verse 11. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Now, I guess to many people that sounds pretty platitudinous, really. Just to say that God is with us in the midst of this, how does that help? Well, let me try and explain a little bit more. God is with us, not as a distant, far-off sort of cosmic deity who watches this tragic world with cool detachment. No, he is with us as Jesus Christ, God made flesh. And what does he look like when he is with us? Well, we only have to read the New Testament to discover. He humbles himself. He becomes a human being. He dies a horrific, bloody, and violent death himself on a cross. Do you know, he looks not unlike some of those pictures which we saw a month ago of bruised and battered and broken and crushed bodies. And this tells us that God is with us in the midst of the misery and the suffering and the pain of this world. He knows what it's like. He has been there. The other gods were strong, but thou wast weak. They rode, but thou didst stumble to a throne. But to our wounds, only God's wounds can speak. And not a God has wounds, but thou alone. part of a poem that Edward Shillitoe wrote during the carnage of the First World War, reminding us that even though Jesus is now in heaven, he still bears wounds to remind us that the God who is with us is a suffering God. The God who calls himself our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble, has known trouble. Trouble of the most horrific sort. Unbearable human suffering. He knows what it is to suffer and to die. But Jesus' suffering is even worse than any of the suffering we can imagine anyone going through in those terrible disasters of a month ago. Because when he is crushed, when he is pierced, he dies on the cross bearing God's punishment for the wrongdoing and rebellion of every single person in this world, potentially. He dies so that we might be forgiven, accepted, loved, and drawn back into friendship with God who loves us. Now, I don't know about you, but I find it very difficult to see the purpose of the death of 6,000 people in the Twin Towers. But the meaning of that one death in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago is clear. He died for us. And therefore, he is our ultimate refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. So there is the first thing I want to say about this terrible situation that we're in. We are in a city in ruins. And in this city in ruins, which we will always be in until the day we die, God is our refuge and strength. And if we take him as our refuge and strength, where does he lead us? Well, he leads us, secondly, to a city in glory. When the Bible talks about the city of Jerusalem, we shouldn't think about modern-day Jerusalem. We should think rather of a heavenly city, a perfect city, a beautiful, glorious city, a city where there's no more death or mourning or crying or pain, a city in some way which it's hard to imagine. God will wipe away every tear from the eyes of those who are mourning. And this, according to the Bible, is our true home. It's the only place of true security and peace. I think one of the things that the events of the last few months and the last few weeks has done is to show us just how insecure our earthly security is. I mean, if you can turn up to work one day in one of the most secure cities in the Western world, and from your desk, as one of the survivors said, watch as an airliner is flown into your office block, what sort of security is that? What sort of security is unable to defend the Pentagon? There is only one secure city that no person can destroy or attack or harm, and that is the city of heaven. And it is from there that our true security flows. It's described in verse 4 in poetic terms. The writer of this psalm says, "There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God," that is the heavenly city, "the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. She is the only city that will not fall. God will help her at the break of day." So if the events of this last month do nothing else, they should make us question how secure our earthly security is. What then, finally, is this psalm telling us to do? Well, it's there in verse 10. The writer says, "Be still. Be still and know that I am God." Now, that doesn't mean lie back and do nothing. It doesn't mean escape from this horror that's all around us. It doesn't mean sort of lie back and relax into a spiritual dream world, relax into a sort of spiritual jacuzzi. It's not that sort of thing. What it means is place your trust in God. Submit to him. Fall before him. You may have heard the story of when Jesus is out on the Sea of Galilee with his friends in a boat. And a terrible storm comes up. And as the waves are crashing over the boat, Jesus says to them, be still, submit, down. Now that's the sort of word that is being used here. God is saying, submit to me, bow down before me, acknowledge that I am in charge, even if you do not understand everything that is going on around you. Because there really is a God in the city of heaven who, although we may not understand it, is in control of the apparently out-of-control events in this world. And one day he will bring his rule to bear. Do not be under any doubt, any illusion about this. Because many people are asking whether it's right to retaliate against these attacks. Is it? Somebody said to me the other day in my church, what's the Christian view on this? And it's hard, isn't it, to give the Christian view on it. I feel in many ways I'm not qualified to give such a view, seeing that I only have a fraction of the information to make up some sort of answer to that question. But what I do know is this, and that is that God will one day retaliate. He will retaliate against all the godlessness and wickedness and evil in the whole of human history. Yes, the perpetrators of that crime, but actually the perpetrators of every crime that has ever taken place in the whole of human history. In other words, they will not escape his justice in this city of glory, because nobody will. And that's what it says in verse 9. It says that he, God, makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow. He shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. One day he will make all things that are wrong right. One day all the weapons of destruction can be destroyed, because all things will be put right again. So that is a vision of what the city in glory will be like. It will be a place of complete security and peace, but it will also be a place of final judgment against all the wickedness of this world. Well, then what is the way from the city in ruins that we live in to the city in glory? It is simply to be still and know that I am God, to place your trust not in any earthly city or nation or superpower, but to place your trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, who died on that cross for us, the one who was crushed for us, who was pierced for us. And if you place your trust in him, you will find that he is with you, your refuge and strength in this city in ruins, but also your ever-present help in trouble, who will take you through this world and on into the city of glory. Now, I realize that what I am suggesting may sound very strange to some people here. The idea of placing all your trust in a man who died on a cross 2,000 years ago may seem ridiculous in the light of the events of the last few weeks. But I suspect that what I have been saying will strike a chord with some people here. And if it has struck a chord with you, can I encourage you to follow it up? Don't just rush back to your office and forget what you've heard today. Take some sort of action. Because the things that we've been thinking about this lunchtime are too important just to sort of think about for a moment and then disappear again. Why not follow it up? And a good way to follow it up would be to sign up for this Christianity Explored course. It's just 7 weeks, starting next Thursday. And even if you're actually pretty angry by what's been said today, and maybe it's raised lots of questions, hostile questions, come along to this course and raise them at the course. I know the leaders will be quite able to deal with them. They won't be fazed by anything that you say. And it's a good opportunity to thrash these sort of things out. And surely, given what has happened over the last month or so, these eternal issues, issues of where our eternal security lies, issues of where our current security lies, are too important just to be brushed under the carpet. I found that even in sleepy Burford, there have been hundreds of people who have been very, very concerned and wanting to discuss these sort of spiritual issues. And I'm sure that's the case in the city as well. So do sign up for the course. And if you'd like to pick my brains on anything I've said today, then do follow me up afterwards. But probably far better, talk to the person who's brought you. And they, I'm sure, would be happy to carry on the conversation.